Hello, and thank you for listening to Horse Heroes. In this podcast, Flor Schoonemakers of EHS Communications takes you on an equestrian odyssey around the globe, talking to some of the leading entrepreneurs and sporting superstars that shape the wonderful world of horsemanship. Listen to these touching tales from amazing horsemen and women as they share their open-hearted horse stories in fun, frank, passion-filled one-on-one conversations. So sit back, kick off your boots, and enjoy the ride.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Horse Heroes podcast. And right now, I am in Portugal again, and it's been 3 years ago when I came to Portugal for the very, very first time. And my first introductions to the Lusitanos were actually at the place I am now, at Montevideo Acre Resort, and I'm in front of Diogo Lima Mayer again. It's been a few years ago that we first met, and I'm very happy to be here again. We had a very, very good podcast that first time I was here. It was a very emotional conversation with João and with you, Diogo, yeah, about, of course, the famous horse Ecuador. A lot has happened in between, and I really would like to speak to you today about what happened and your future vision and how you are, of course. So good morning, Diogo.
Flor, good morning. First of all, thank you very much for being here again in Montevideo and to catch up with me, which is not always easy.
No, you said I need a PA. Exactly. And I think you need two.
Exactly. But with pleasure that I'm here again. And I have to say that I really, I'm really impressed with the passion you bring to Portugal and to the Lusitano breeders, that you are kind of connecting a lot of passionate people about the Lusitano breed. So you're doing a really good work. And it's a pleasure for me to change my ideas and to give a little bit my vision about Montevideo, about the future of the Lusitano breed. I know exactly where I am at the moment, and the vision and the journey I would like to continue. I have those ideas are quite clear for me, so it's a pleasure to share those ideas, whether people like it or not. But they are my ideas, and I always say. The breeders that I really admire, they have strong convictions and they have solid ideas. And those are the ones I would like to share today.
Yes, and I remember very well the first interview I had with you and with João, of course, speaking about the journey you had so far. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the horse that brought you a lot, which was Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And that time you were also telling me about Lirio and about Maestro, the younger horses you had to start to compete, to, you know, that were the future horses. And I was lucky enough to see Maestro and Lirio, actually, both of them in the training yesterday. Can you tell me a little bit what happened with these two horses and the future plans in the sport?
Yeah, so it's good that you start explaining a little bit about the competition program. About Ecuador, you know, he was more than a horse for us. He was like a friend. Mm-hmm. And the whole journey for me was like an MBA, you know. It was like going to the university and a specialization in the sport, because it was a completely new journey for me as an owner. We did a lot of mistakes in the way. But it's like that for anyone that starts something new. And now, like 5 or 6 years later, we are all a bit more mature. We're starting to have a bit of white hair, and we are all a little bit more mature and experienced. So, I would say the passion is exactly the same, the drive and the ambition as well. The difference is that it's a path that we already know and that we have already gone through. So, in a way, it's a bit easier because we've been there. Of course, every horse has its own story, and Lirio and Maestro are completely different. And you know, talking a bit about João, I also see that João now with 31, he's a much more mature rider. And what really makes a rider is riding different horses. Ecuador was an outstanding horse. These two that he's riding are completely different. And riding different horses with different qualities and different weaknesses is what really makes a top rider. And These two horses, I think they have two things in common with Ecuador. They have the right ability. So the horses give everything. Liriu is a bit more a kind of a shy horse. Super talented. So in a way, he really reflects the Baroque Lusitano that you can ask Piaf and Passage at five, because he did it. It was a little bit a different way for Juan to build him towards Grand Prix, because what a horse had in talent, he lacked in sportive ability. So he didn't have the strength of Ecuador, for instance. So João's construction of Liriu was one more focused on giving him more muscle and patience, because, you know, Grand Prix is all about doing the exercises in 6 minutes without interruption. So for that, you need a horse that is physically and athletically ready to perform the tests without any tensions. But was a horse that also made João a better rider, because I remember João had the Grand Prix completely done when Liriu was 6 years old. And it was not the case that you said, he's going too fast. No, the horse just give it to you. But for João was also a different exercise, in a way that he needed to understand that Liriu needed time to show all that talent. And Liriu now is a done Grand Prix project. He has competed last year in the European Championship in Crozet. He was the best Lusitano and the best Iberian horse in the show. I really think he deserved to be in the final, and I think he was literally 1%, like 0.5% away from reaching the freestyle, and I think he deserved it, because in my opinion, the judges were a bit conservative, especially in the Piaf Passage. I think João did a really, really good work. But it's still a very young horse. And this year, João, I think, will show even a better Liriu than last year. You know, a lot of riders say that. I'm talking a little bit on the tribune as an owner, but it takes a life to get to the Grand Prix, and it takes another life to improve the Grand Prix. So I think the top riders in the circuit are those that can manage to improve the horse while they are already in Grand Prix. And that's really difficult. It's as difficult as to get to the Grand Prix. So it's just like finding different, like little fine tunings, normally mostly about the balance of the horse, not like doing the exercises itself, because João will not improve Lirius Piaf by doing 1,000 Piafs. No, it's just about the balance and working his physicality. João does a lot of cross work in Montevideo. He'll work Cavalettis. So it's also about giving the horse time to really get the strength he needs to make the Grand Prix even easier. Because that, you know, the top points, so the 8s, the 9s, and the 10s, are given by the judges when everything looks really easy. So I think João this year, Liriu is 11, and I believe he can. That's my feeling. Let's see if it's true or not. But I think Liriu is ready to give another little step, because he's solid on the 70s, which is already really difficult. I believe he can now give another little step upwards. Let's see. Maestro is, I would say, a horse that reminds us a lot of about Ecuador, especially his work ethic is exactly the same. So it's a horse like with a strong character, a bit the macho, the alpha macho, you know, very Latin, very territorial, very stallion, but in a way a horse that is never says I will not do that. You know, you can take him to the other side of the world and he will go with you. Physically a bit different than Ecuador. I think Ecuador was a horse maybe with more pushing power than Maestro. So it was a horse that was always carrying weight. Maestro has the Grand Prix written in his face in a way that collection is super easy, much easier than Ecuador. Everything that is going sideways is much easier as well. So was also a horse that you can immediately see at 4 or 5 that he would be a Grand Prix horse. But was also a horse that needed time to get the strength because he's 180. So yes. I think he's the biggest Lusitano I know. He is a beast. When you see that monster, let's say, under saddle, you will never imagine that he has so much talent for collection, because he finds it so easy. I'm lucky enough to ride him at weekends, hacking him out. It's a bit, I used to say, it's my department, it's the hacking department. And for Maestro, is really important because he's a big horse that also needs that freedom, yes, to go in the fields. João finds it maybe a bit risky for him because he's tiny and Maestro is huge, and he's a horse that, when I ride him, I've ridden a lot of horses, I feel respect for him. You know, I respect him in a way. You feel like you have a Ferrari underneath you, and if he runs off, he puts you in your place. But I really love riding him because he gives me so much power, the feeling of power I've never had, and at the same time, it's really good for him because I, in a way, I'm a bit crazy too, because he feels, okay, this guy that is on top of me, he's also a bit like me, you know, he's not afraid of anything. So I take him to the cows, I take him to the lake. So if there is something that he looks at, I will not go, no, yes, you will. So I also think it's important for a horse to have that go.
Yes, the freedom a little bit.
It's absolutely crucial, because they... going to the arena every day is not, of course, when you are in a competition career, you need that discipline, but never forgetting they also need a bit of fun. But yes, Maestro is due to debut in Grand Prix this year, hopefully April, May. We still have to decide exactly where he's going to debut. But he's a horse I believe a lot in. I don't know where people love to make comparisons. I think every horse has its own person. Every horse has its own story. We need a bit of luck as well. But I see a lot of things that make me dream. And at the end, you know, we breeders, we have to dream. Yeah, yesterday I was hearing an interview from Rodrigo Pessoa, the Olympic champion. And he was exactly sharing his admiration for breeders, because breeders are a bit the unsung heroes of the equestrian world, because we are in the bottom, but actually breeders with passion that believe in its horses, it's very important. And I am a dreamer. Of course, we need to keep the feet in the ground and to make good decisions. I'm really lucky to work with so many people, with so much talented people around me, like João, Coralie, our vet team. I really believe we have a world-class team with our horses. And I just, my role is just to try to make them agree and make them feel that it is possible. That is one thing, like the Portuguese, sometimes they are afraid to dream high.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid to dream high. I think I told you in the last podcast, the first teacher I had in the faculty in business administration, he had a sentence written that was, dreaming doesn't pay a tax. Unfortunately, our tax still doesn't tax it for dreaming. But you need to dream, and of course fight for those dreams, because one thing is to dream and wait for some angel to come from the sky. That doesn't happen. You need to go after it.
Yeah, but what I think is really impressive, if we look back, I think it was January 2023, I think. It was September,
yeah.
September 22, actually. So it's already a little bit longer ago that I came here first time. You spoke about Lirio and Maestro, what the dreams were.
Yeah.
And then if you look so many years ahead, they actually happened. I mean, you have the horses, still healthy. They're still amazing. They're doing the Grand Prix. You still have the team together. João still training.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and I also think what's really funny, I remember that you speak about Maestro, and I see your eyes when you speak about Maestro, that it's complete, you adore the horse, I see it.
Yeah.
But what was, yesterday I seen him again, I saw him then, he was the monster and the beast with the very big head and maybe not the prettiest. Oh my God, yesterday, this horse is some horse with big sex appeal and make all the heads turn for sure if he's... Yeah. Going to be the big famous guy again.
Yeah. No, it's exactly what you say. I'm lucky now to work with all these people that are a bit older. We are all a bit older. But one thing I think has been a common success factor of Montevelo is the consistency. In Portugal, it's very typical owners. They fail with results and they just blame the rider and they change the rider. And And one thing I'm very proud of is the consistency of our team. João has been working with us for more than 12 years.
Yes.
He started as a total rookie and he's with us. So I think that also says something about us. And I really like to work with people on the long term. Of course, you know as well that we have setbacks sometimes. But that doesn't mean that I still don't believe in them. You know, setbacks are part of the process. With Maestro was one of those horses that from day one when I saw him, he looked like the ugly kid of the class.
The underdog.
But he told me clearly with his attitude that he would do it. João wanted to debut him in Grand Prix last year. And I told him, no, we're going to debut him in 1 year because when he comes in the ring, he needs to be very... Everything needs to look solid, you know?
Yeah.
There's no rush. You have Lirio competing, so why is the rush? So let's wait. And especially now that judges are very picky and want to see, I think, the first impression. When you, especially for a rider that Juan that has done Olympics, Europeans, World Championships, the first impression is a very... important one. So yeah, I think this year he's ready to go in the ring, and let's see if the vision was the right one. But I really believe the horse will be an important horse for the Lusitano and for the Portuguese team.
Super. Yeah, I cannot wait what happens when he goes there. But you're talking, of course, about your team and your collaboration with a lot of people, and what I know over the last few years, because I've seen it, of course, you also work together with other countries a lot. Yeah. Other riders, other breeders, and I think you are maybe not the only one, but
yeah.
Not many people in Portuguese breeders do that. I
yeah.
think you always think a little bit outside the box. Why is that?
Yeah, it's very clear for me that, and also started a little bit with when we were forming Ecuador team. I really wanted to surround myself with people that could genuinely help us, you know? And sometimes it's not a criticism towards my country, but when you are in a small circle with old habits and this always the same people, you create certain habits that not always favor you, you know? And it was very clear for me that we needed people that would genuinely tell us the truth. What you're doing is a mistake. Go left and don't go right, you know. And because we were leaving a new journey, it was like a discovery for us. And where I saw a horse with potential, a rider with potential, I needed voices that could really help me take good decisions. Because at the end, my role as an owner was to take good decisions. And I used to say that in a sports project, the owner should take the decisions for the good and the bad. When we go in the right direction, good. But when we make a mistake, when we fail, I also take the responsibility. Because at the end, we have to pay the bills. You know, it's all very nice, but someone in the end needs to pay the check. Going abroad was really important for me because I really wanted people that could say, Diogo, try this way, go that way. We've been lucky to work with outstanding people like Carl Hester. Now Gareth Hughes is riding one of our mares. We had Kira Kirkland as the national trainer of Portugal. Recently, Monica Teodorescu, the national German team, was also in Portugal. Due to also some shows we did in Belgium and Holland, I got to know the Van Olst family.
Yes.
So I changed ideas with a lot of people. And at the end... I was recently in the European Championship having dinner with Emma Blundell, the owner of Mountain Joint Freestyle. At the end, you start realizing that their challenges are the same. You know, we all have horses, different breeds, different countries, but the struggles are a bit the same. So having this possibility to change ideas with these people that have much more knowledge than me is opening me horizons and make me think a little bit outside of the box. So I still really, when I have a doubt, I dare to, maybe sometimes I call Carl, I have this problem. What do you think?
Yes.
Give me an idea. And people like to help us.
Yeah.
Because I think the first step of being humble is to ask for help. And I don't always have the answer. For a lot of times, I don't know what to do. So I just ask again, people I really trust will give me their honest idea about where I should go. And then at the end, I need to decide whether it's a good idea or not. And again, I also the way I try to lead with my team is never in a very dictator. No, I have this idea. I call João Corrali. Look, what you think about this idea? And sometimes they give me different ideas, and I accept their ways is better than the way I suggest. It's a teamwork, you know. And at the end, good teams make good results.
Yeah.
And working, we've been working for a lot of years, more than 10 years. We know each other very well. We know our weaknesses. We know when we had bad days. But it's I'm very proud to work with them and to learn with them every day. If there is something for me is crucial is to have talent around me and to surround around. And I'm lucky to have a lot of talent around.
Yeah, but it's also, of course, I live in Holland. I come from our KWPN horses. It's a completely different breed, of course, than the Lusitanos. Yeah. I never really realized before I came to Portugal and learned from the breeders here. And of course, I've been really, really lucky as well to all the people who opened the doors for me to show and tell me and learn me about Lusitanos.
Yeah.
But some people in Holland, like the warmbloods there, don't really always understand everything about the Lusitanos. And then, of course, Carl and Garrett and Rebecca and Ruby they are my friends. Carl I knew for years as well, riding warmbloods, KWPN horses as well. And Rebecca and Garrett have been coming to the stable where I started always, where I always ride the horses in Holland. And you know, so they are so familiar with the Dutch horses, but they really love the Lusitanos. And it's
we are in a very important point for the Lusitano breeds, because if you look back, what the Lusitano has done in the last decade is absolutely remarkable.
Mm-mm.
We have a very small breed. We're talking about briefly 3,000 mares worldwide. So in terms of numbers, the population of the Lusitano, I don't know in detail, but I would say less than 5% of, for instance, the KWPN. So it's a really small breed. But nevertheless, despite them being a small breed, if you look statistically at the results the Lusitano breed has achieved, mostly in dressage, in the last decade, is incredible. I remember in Tokyo Olympic Games, the Lusitano was the second represented breed in Grand Prix, with 11 horses in different teams. The first was the Dutch, the KWPN. And if you start thinking, how is that? Are they doing something special? And my answer, yes, we have something special. And what we have something special is the talent and the rideability and the temperament of the Lusitanos. And that is the DNA of the Lusitanos. And as you know, it's a sentence Gareth Hughes uses a lot that I completely agree. A top young horse is born. A top Grand Prix horse is trained. So the Grand Prix is not born with a horse. You need to train it. And the Lusitanos, they have the DNA to get there.
Yes, talent for that.
And I think the world started discovering this talent the Lusitanos had for Grand Prix. I'm not saying that our horse is the best in the world. We have a different horse. As you know, our breed is a closed stud book. It's one of the few closed stud books in the world, like the Turkana or even the PRE. But we're lucky to have a legacy of rideability from bullfighting times, the controversial bullfighting times, but that made the Lusitano the horse it is today, mentally strong, forgiving, allowing the rider to make mistakes, brave in the ring. All those characteristics that are so important for the Grand Prix, the Lusitano has it. And I used to say here every week, I welcome riders from all over the world in Montevideo every week. I used to say that the character is the non-negotiable feature of the Lusitano. If we touch the character, we lose the DNA of the Lusitano, and suddenly our horse is not recognizable anymore. So that is that's the non-negotiable thing. And of course, I have a vision for the Lusitano. I'm very critical with our own horses we breed. I think we need to improve our horses. We cannot change that because if going back to Ecuador, he was not the best horse in the world in terms of natural movements, but he had, for me, the best, the definition of the best temperament in the world. It was a 10.
Yes.
And how do you define that temperament? Sacrifice, the working spirit, the ability to suffer even when he was struggling, the ability to give confidence to the rider, his, you know, his motivation to always outperform himself. That, in my opinion, was temperament at the highest level, and character, and that is something you cannot lose. And it's sometimes not visible when you look at the horse because the temperament comes on their brain. That is, for me, the crucial thing. And you ride a lot of Lusitanos yourself, and you ride Warmbloods as well. They are different horses.
Yes.
They are weaker. They have to be built in a different way. So what is my challenge? My challenge is really, and I say my challenge because I breed a horse that I believe in, to keep this temperament, I would say Ecuador's temperament, because he's for me the best temperament I've ever seen, and then try to add a bit more athletic capacity. Also something, again, advantages of talking with top riders. Gareth the other day was telling me, you need to bring a bit more body move in your horses in general. He defines horses in two fields, leg movers and body movers. And I think in the Lusitano we have a lot of leg movers, not so many back movers and body movers. What I'm talking is we need also to bring a bit more suppleness in top lines. Some of the Lusitano top lines are a bit stiff due to the bullfighting, because you know, bullfighting is all about walk and canter. There is no trot in the bullfighting. And also when you have a bull in the ring, you cannot have a canter that is too big, otherwise the bull will catch you. For dressage, you know, the features you need are a bit different. So I'm trying to introduce in our formula a bit more top line elasticity. And if I have to point out also a quality you need to improve in the Lusitano is the canter. We used to say that the canter is the Lusitano's best movement is the canter, but that's a bullfighting canter, which is different from a Grand Prix canter, a dressage canter. And why? Because for the Grand Prix, you need a canter that has the ability to extend, to make a good extended canter, for instance, but at the same time, a horse that can keep the quality in the collection without getting tense and bringing the weight into the hind legs, to the hocks. So I think that's the feature we also need to focus more at the moment in the Lusitano, is to improve the quality of the canter. And as you know, 60% of the Grand Prix is in canter. I think we have good canters here in Montevideo, but I struggle sometimes when I need to bring a new stallion with different genetics from mine to choose to pick top quality canters. It's not easy. So I think we'll get there. And just to finish this answer, also, a challenge we have in the Lusitano, that is the fact that the Lusitano is so good, doing so many things. You have Lusitanos in driving carriages, like Figueres, that became world champion.
Yes.
You have Lusitanos bullfighting. You have Lusitanos doing working equitation, doing classical riding in the arena,
jumping.
So the Lusitanos, they literally do everything.
Yes.
But that comes with a problem. It's very difficult to have 5 breeders in a table agreeing in the direction. Whereas, for instance, in the Dutch Warmblood, your horses either jump or they do dressage.
Yes.
Or a bit of both, and they go eventing. So it's very easy to choose a direction. In the Lusitano, it's very difficult. I think that's a challenge we have to survive with, to live with it. I think that what is going to happen is like a group of breeders that will go towards more a direction of sports, like me. I have a lot of friends like Braga, Coimbra, that are a bit in a different direction. And I don't criticize them for them, for their vision, because they feel it's the horse they feel is the right one. And that gives a bit the magic also on the Lusitano of being very diverse. But it's sometimes difficult when you need to convince a group of riders to select towards a direction. Because of this diversity we have in the Lusitano, our horse is so good, doing so many things, that at the end, in my opinion, that is also, that comes also a bit with some challenge to agree in the direction we go.
Yes, and of course, this weekend was the APSL approvals in Lisbon. I was there because for me it was actually the same date as the KWPN approval. So I was a bit like, oh, where do I go? Do I go at home to see our stallions or... But for me, it's just very, very interesting to learn how do they get scored, the stallions, because it's a complete different system than we do in Holland. Can you explain a little bit how that works with like this weekend in Lisbon?
Yeah, I can. Of course, now we enter a bit in the controversial issues, because if you speak with five breeders, they will give you five different opinions. You know, I will give my own opinion. It's my opinion. I think this stallion approval that was implemented, I think, two years ago. So this is the third.
This was the third.
This is the third Salon du Caval, so like the stallion grading. I think is a good initiative in the way that before we had like five or six different gradings all over Portugal, with bad conditions, with in small arenas, without any facilities for the horses' comfort and well-being, and now we have one single approval in January. Maybe it was a bit too much, like to go from six to one, but I think it's still a good decision to have this this event in Lisbon before the breeding season starts, and every breeder that wants to get their stallion approved has the chance to show their horses. And it's also for the market good to see so many different stallions and to compare a bit those stallions. And you saw in Lisbon stallions clearly designed towards dressage.
Yes.
And the others also coming from the Baroque bloodlines. So for a completely different purpose, and still both horses coming from those two different worlds also being approved as stallions. So I think the association showed to be inclusive as well. My critics are mostly, I think people need to understand that the scores that the horses get in the end are not a stamp of quality for their future, you know, because what the judges are scoring is what we call padrão de raça. And the padrão de raça is like the pattern of the Lusitano, is like a thermometer on where the morphology of the horse should be, okay? And it's not just like a simple assessment of horses' quality and sportive potential. They are assessing whether the horses that are in the grading are close or are far away from the pattern of the Lusitano that the stud book has defined 40 years ago when the Lusitano stud book was created. And I think it's important because, again, I was telling you before, the Lusitano is a different horse than the others. Yeah. And I think our horse should get an identity, okay? And we cannot lose that visual identity. But the market needs to understand that for a horse to get 75 points or 79 points, that horse isn't necessarily better than a horse that will get 68, okay? That is, in my opinion, is not an assessment of potential and quality. And if you look back about the top performance in the Lusitano history, they were not horses with a lot of points. I give you some examples. Ruby, 71 points. With, I'm not wrong, 7 for walk, 8 for trot, 7 for canter, I think, something like that. I'm not 100% sure, but I know he had 71 or 71.5 points. Ecuador, 71 points. Fugoso, not a lot of points. All horses that became historic for the Lusitano that reach... that broke records, that reached history for the Lusitano, and were not horses of 80 points. I'm not saying that a horse with 80 points will not one day break all the records. He might do it. I'm just saying that the market should perceive those scores as a proxy towards the pattern, not an assessment of quality. Okay, those are different things. I think assessments of quality, in my opinion, are functional tests, either if the working equitation results, bullfighting results, if a horse is really good bullfighting, dressage results. They are measuring just whether the horse is close or far away from the padrão de raça, from the pattern. And that should be very clear, and not always, I think the market doesn't always understand that. Okay,
no.
They believe, okay, 80 points, that should be the stallion I should use.
Yes, no, but that's why this is so different from how it goes in Holland.
Yeah.
You know, you have also all the pre-selections and then...
Yeah.
But the stallions need to prove themselves.
In the Netherlands, I know the system. I know the system for the Oldenburg and for the Hanoverian.
Yeah.
Everything there is towards sport.
Yes.
So the assessment, they're not assessing the beauty of the horse. They assess the potential, walk, trot, canter, rideability. They do. They have the trials where the horses are tested for from people within the stud book by different riders.
Yes.
They need sometimes also to jump. So there are a lot of assessments, but all towards sport. I'm not criticizing the what we do in Portugal, because at the end we have our own rules, we have our own horse with its own identity. I think the only critique is how the market perceives the assessment of these gradings. They're not assessments of quality. They are assessments of the pattern of
yes.
the Lusitania.
Yes.
Okay. And that should be quite clear, because otherwise all the market will use the horses with a lot of points. That will for sure give horses with a lot of beauty, but I think what made the Lusitano really special was the fact that our horse never lost the functional side of it. And if you look to our neighbors in Spain, now maybe being a bit controversial, I think the mistake they've been doing was directing their breed clearly towards beauty, and they lost a bit the functional side. I'm not saying something new, because a lot of the Spanish riders, they point out that the fact that they need now to ride Lusitanos because they don't find enough good Spanish horses, and they have a breed 10 times bigger than ours. So we cannot lose the functional side of the Lusitanos, otherwise we will destroy our breed.
Yes.
The way the breed is mounted, the point system, maybe I think it could be updated. There could be some updates, and I've already suggested to the association to make some updates. I give you one idea, for instance, is to give the half mark like we do in dressage. Sometimes maybe they're not brave. The judges are not brave enough to give a 9 to the canter, but maybe they give an 8.5.
Yes.
So maybe sometimes they look at maybe a stallion is not approved because he got 3 sixes, but maybe... Okay, maybe the back is a 6.5, and then he's approved. So I think giving the half mark would be a really good idea to make to distinguish stallions better, because a 7 for the trot is very general, and maybe okay, it's not a trot for an 8, but it's a trot for 7.5, like they do in dressage, you know. And in dressage, they've made the introduction of the half point. And made the judges, I think, more fair giving points, because they can distinguish different results and different riders. Eh?
Yeah.
Another idea that I think, you know, when I give these ideas, the answer is always the past. Okay, but how can we compare now with... I think, like everything in life, we need to innovate.
Yes, I think the past is the past.
There should be a mark when I'm really talking about functionality and rideability. I think in a way there should be an introduction of a mark for rideability. Okay. I tell you, for instance, I've seen stallions in the approval, maybe they didn't get the 8s or the 9s for the movements, but they show immense rideability, the way they did their transitions, the easiness they showed in the ring. So why not making an introduction of a mark for rideability? Because at the end, why are you in Portugal? Because you want to ride our horses.
Yes.
So, and not KWPN. You want to ride Lusitano. So why not giving a sign to the market to introduce a mark for rideability? You
yes,
know, in Portugal...
Actually, that would be really...
And that's not that difficult.
Really good.
That wouldn't be that difficult. I think if you look at a presentation of a horse, you can assess rideability from a lot of angles, from transitions, from the relaxation they've shown in the ring. Sometimes a horse gets 999, but it's all with tension, so give a lower mark for rideability. So,
yeah, but maybe also do something with the test riders then, you know, if there's a if they
yeah,
I think changes.
My doubt is whether the people that are in charge of the Lusitano Association will have a bold vision to innovate. We cannot be stuck in time. We have to innovate.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean we are betraying our legacy. No, we, like any breed, like any society, we need to improve and we need to make a direction towards the future. So I think little changes that are going in the right direction are not a problem and are not a betrayal to our values and to our history. So those are two little ideas. And just to finish, also something I think the association and the Lusitano should really think about is on the mare side. I think we're giving a sign. The way the Lusitano studbook is designed is clearly 90% of the spotlights are towards stallions and the mares. They're completely forgotten. And I give you an example. I'm at the moment in Montevideo, I have 7 mares under saddle. We have Lufada in England competing with Gareth. If you want to approve a mare, you cannot show her under saddle. So it's just giving the sign, a bit like in old times in society, women stay at home taking care of children. And that's a stupid sign, in my opinion, because mares, if you look at the last 3 or 4 Olympic Games, how many times mares have been in the top 3 places?
Yeah,
a lot of times. Olympic champions.
I'm glad you're saying this, because I have actually had quite some Dutch people asking me for mares. They want ridden mares, and they're looking for mares,
but
and not everybody wants the stallions.
We're talking about maybe 5-6 breeders in Portugal that ride their mares.
Yes.
So I've always been riding mares. Unfortunately, it's not... So also talking a bit on a business perspective is a bit more difficult, because a stallion can generate business through semen sales. So a mare, when you have her as an asset, it's more difficult to get a return on the investment, because there is not like a real market for embryos. There is, but it's a tiny market. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing here in Montevideo is all our mares are tested under saddle, all. What I'm doing is I'm being very critical. Those that don't show the rideability I want, they don't breed. And the sign that most of the time is given in the market is, okay, we ride a mare. She's crazy. Okay, she goes to breed. She's lame. Let's put her breeding. No, it's wrong. We need to be very, very critical and demanding with the mares we breed with. Because at the end, if you speak with 3 or 4 breeders, they will always tell you, our breeding program depends mostly on this mare.
Yes.
You know, one mare is enough to make a good breeding program. So I think the association should give a sign. I have some ideas that I've also proposed, that riding the mares is super important. I know there are some initiatives going on to allow breeders to, with some exchanges with schools, to have mares in training at lower cost. I tell you, getting to see my mares under saddle is making me a better breeder, because we see them under saddle. We can, and at the end, you don't need sometimes 5 years under. No, 1 year is enough for you to assess the rideability. Are they balanced? How is the reaction to the leg? How is their mouth? What is the weaknesses? And at the end, I think I'm then a better breeder, because I can decide better the kind of stallion I need to compensate the weaknesses of the mares. So, giving a sign to ride the mares, I think the mare should be shown under saddle. That should be changed right away. It's for me, it's unacceptable. You cannot show a mare under saddle, because we are in the 21st century. We are not in the 19th century anymore. And mares are to be ridden, not to be stuck in the fields just breeding. So also, they should be rewarded by being ridden, because the breeders that are doing that are doing a financial effort that should be rewarded, not the other way around. So it's, again, an idea. I hope there should be an update in the way the association look at the mares.
I think it's a process. You cannot suddenly ride all the mares, but we should start somewhere. And here I'm trying to give the example by riding our mares. There are other breeders like Figueres, the maybe the best horse they have bred in terms of awareness was Batuta. But they have now one with Maria Keitan that I really like.
Oscar.
Yeah. And other breeders are doing the same. Not a lot. And I think, again, the association needs to give the way they
you're talking about Olinda.
Olinda. Yeah. But the way the association rules also passes signs to the market. So, I don't know, give an award to the best mare of the year.
Yeah. Yes, that would be really, really nice.
I'm just giving ideas to the market should perceive riding the mares as crucial. And riding the mares, because in Portugal, typically, a breeder has 50 mares. Every mare breeds. The demand and the level of demand for the mares is any mare can breed, as long as I have a good stallion. For me, at least, is the opposite. We should have a really good mare, and the good mares, you can pick any stallion, the result is a good one. And that is proven scientifically. The mare passes more than the stallion. So it's another idea I hope can be at least started somewhere. I think it's a process, but riding the mares is absolutely crucial.
Yeah, but I think I'm a foreigner, of course. I'm not from Portugal. I really love the Lusitanos because... Yeah. For me, you know, what you said about the warm bloods, then you feel really confident on the Lusitanos. I really like their energy and their heads and their characters. For me, that's really nice. And I see that a lot of people from all over the world are asking me to come with me to Portugal to go on these, you know, the horse holidays. I do take them. Now I've got the lady with me from Australia to ride the Lusitanos again. So the whole world is... getting more aware of the Lusitanos. And sometimes I wonder a little bit if Portugal realizes that that is happening, that maybe more people want to come and people are asking for mares and not just the stallions, because a lot of places they don't want, they're not allowed. Like in Holland, there's a lot of yards, they don't want the stallions there. So then, or you have to geld them. If they're older, you will not do it. So it would be really, really good to do more with the mares.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. In Portugal, we still have this culture that every horse should be a stallion. And when we geld a horse, the first question, why? Was he crazy?
Yes.
No. This shows a bit the mentality in my country that every horse should breed. And no, I think we need to be really demanding with the stallions, but as even more with the mares. So, and I'm lucky enough to testify every week here at our place. I have even more requests for mares than for stallions. There are countries when it's simply impossible to bring a stallion, like Sweden.
Yeah,
you cannot. It's almost impossible to take a stallion to Sweden because 95% of the stables don't accept stallions. There's a big opportunity. Opportunity for mares also. And I think you have ridden mares. When you connect with the mare, they give you 300%. So they have their days, but they can absolutely be competitive in sports. Look at Talera, last Olympic champion twice. You had Bella Rose doing now Mountain Run Freestyle with Catherine Dufour. So many mares at top sports with different origins.
Yeah.
So for me, it's very clear. That may be the special horse I will breed one day that will get into the medals. Why not be a mare? We never know. So we cannot lose that. And the association should give a sign. Riding the mares is the way as well. And I speak with some old-fashioned breeders that I'm friends with a lot of breeders also from different from the way I breed. And I see the mentality still having the mares doing their job, which is to breed.
Yeah.
I think it's an old way of thinking, and we should clearly change that mentality.
Yeah, but you also you just said about the grading of the horses, how they give the scores on the approvals. That also there were a lot of foreign people. I met people from Canada, there were Belgian people from England. So there were a lot of foreigners interested in the approvals, and also watching a lot of people online. Yeah. So if you would, you call, of course, already you said a few things, but if you would look at the future of the Lusitanos, what do you think will happen or should happen?
That's a good point. I have a lot of ideas.
But in the perfect world?
In the perfect world, I think we should walk towards the truth, you know. Now, also pointing out a controversial issue. You know, our horses compete internationally in FEI competitions. Okay, what is happening in FEI competitions? You have doping rules.
Yes.
Okay, so your horses are tested. In the Lusitano, it's something I've been trying hard also in the association, and everyone makes me shut up my mouth. I really believe there should be doping tests in every stallion approval in the association, because I know, unfortunately, there is, let's say, in a way I cannot harsh anyone. They are not 100% true, those gradings. Okay, so bringing doping tests to get a bit more honesty on what is being shown should be mandatory, and just follow the FEI rules. Okay, if the breeders know that the horses they are taking might go under a doping test, maybe we will go towards a direction of a bit more truth. Okay, so that is one thing I should really say. I know it's very controversial, but that's my opinion. And the same for all the events the Lusitano Association organizes, like the International Festival. That is, for instance, one step where the PRE is far ahead of us. They test in their, I know, for instance, at CICAB, the big event they organize in Seville, any horse can go to a doping. So, in a way, I'm almost sure, and some have been caught in the past. What I'm saying is that everything should be done in a more transparent way. Because at the end, you can try to deceive the market once, but that lie will come up later, sooner or later. Okay, and you know you can hide a lot of things in terms of temperament, in terms of discomfort, if there are no doping tests. So I think everything should be a little bit more transparent, and bringing doping tests would give us a bit more honest, would bring a bit more honesty to the market. Also something that we should go a little bit more is, again, every sign the Lusitano should give is towards riding our horses, okay? So that mark for rideability is an idea.
Really
I'm not saying that suddenly we will start breeding warmbloods. No, we should stick to the Lusitano identity that is different. But sticking to this identity doesn't mean we can innovate and we cannot give signs to improve rideability and to give the market, because at the end, you know, everyone, what is really nice about breeding is that it's a democratic world. You know, anyone can breed the horse they feel. And maybe the horse you feel is the right one is different than mine. But at the end, you will be evaluated with the horses you breed. In maybe 5 years, if you start breeding, if the market doesn't like the horses you breed, you will have a problem. So I think it's just the signs you pass to the market. These gradings, they pass a sign that the points are everything. And I'm quite comfortable to tell you, because I've had mares. I think, if I'm not wrong, we still have the record of the Champion of Champion awards in the Lusitano Festival. We won 3 times. With Queixosa, with Diamant, with Vechada, mares with 82, 84, 85 points. So I know what is having horses with a lot of points.
Yeah.
But against me, sometimes those highly valued horses are not the best are not the best under saddle horses. Okay. So a stamp of the points is not a stamp of quality. Okay. That's what the market should understand. Again, I'm not criticizing the breeders that base their criteria on points. And for instance, I give you an example: Escorial, that was in Tokyo Olympic Games. I think he's a horse with 80 points, and he brings incredible things to his progeny.
Yes.
Incredible things, and he's a really, really good father. I think we need to be fair about that. But if I look at Escorial's sons, how many, I think if I'm not wrong, close to 1,000 sons. Close to 1,000. How many of them are doing Grand Prix? Maybe I count with my fingers. And this is a fact. I'm not criticizing. I'm just bringing facts to the table. So I think the market should be a bit careful about going just towards the direction of beauty and the points, because for me it would be very easy to just select based on points. And I had the mares with, I think Vechada had 86 points, was the second highest mare in the world. I think there was one in Spain with 87, but I had Vechada that was. And Vechada was not the mare that passed me most readability, wasn't. We have Chiquinha, for instance, that has 72 points from Quixote,
yes.
So half-sister of Batuta. Everything that comes from her has a rideability of 10. And for me, rideability is the way, and my selection is clearly towards sports and not towards the beauty and not towards the really morphological part, okay? Again, just to finish, those things are important, but we cannot give the points the champion of champion title or the Champions League title, because they're not. And if we go towards that direction, I believe we're gonna lose what makes the Lusitano special, which is their temperament, their character, their rideability. And the market should understand that.
Yes. I think you should go in the board of the APSL.
That's not going to happen, at least in the next few years, because that's another issue. If one day that happens, I think a lot of changes within the association need to take place, because the way the organization is structured, in my opinion, is very old-fashioned. I'm not saying that the people that are working there, they have a lot of passion. They work in a pro bono way. So you need to understand the directors of the association. They're not paid to be there.
No, they do it out of passion.
They do out of passion. So hats off to them. I think the main challenge is to renew the governance of the association.
Yes.
And I know exactly the top stud books in the world, like KWPN, Oldenburg, Hanoverian, how they are organized. Is a different way than when they were founded, because nowadays the Lusitano is a worldwide icon. So back in 1980s, the Lusitano was bred in Portugal by some breeders, farmers, friends. So we're talking about a micro business. Nowadays the Lusitano is a worldwide business. There are horses everywhere in the world. So the association should be updated.
Yes.
There should be, and this is a very clear vision for me, but this would require changes that needed to be approved in a general assembly. Complicated issues, not to be bring to the table at the moment. But I don't say no one day in the future. At the moment, I'm 100% focused in our project. But I think any change in the rules of the association should pass by a change of the governance to bring more transparency and to bring an update in the way the Lusitano is structured. So, for instance, I give you an example. KWPN, they have a director for sport, a director for breeding,
yes.
A director for the stud book, a director for international countries, for
yes.
exports. Maybe this sounds okay. This sounds a bit expensive. No, the Lusitano, as far as I know, their finances are very good, so they have no problems to restructure a bit the way the association is made. What is happening is that the decision making process of the association is based mostly in one or two people, that at the end, when you decide alone, it's difficult to change. And I think, in my opinion, there should be clearly a board of directors, of non-executive directors, and there should be a board of executives paid with salaries by all the partners, all the breeding programs of the association. And that should clearly report to the board of non-executive directors. But at the moment, it's not the way it is. So it's not for me. I think it's something for the future to be renewed. But I think the problem is, in my opinion, the problem is not the people that are working there, is the way the association is structured. Some old habits that will continue unless there is a renovation of the government, of the governance structure of the Lusitano Association that is completely old-fashioned. This is my opinion. Until that change is done, you can change the names. The controversial will always be there because basically the decision-making process is based on one or two persons. And that will always create controversial. Anyway, when we're talking about horses, you know, there is always controversy. There are always issues that are that bring a lot of passion also to the table. This is very clear to me.
I think how you explained it in between, that you said the Lusitano breed started with a small group of friends and people started breeding maybe a little bit for fun with the Lusitanos. And a lot did happen in the years. And also what I said, that the world is...
Yeah. And you were in Lisbon last weekend. Yes. There were breeders from Canada.
Yes.
I'm not a lot from other European countries, but now you have Lusitanos in Australia, New Zealand, in South Africa,
in all these countries.
I think Portugal has a double responsibility because we are still in charge of the Lusitano. So the APSL is the mother of all associations, but that doesn't mean we have. We will dictate everything. We have to, in my opinion, our association should give the example in terms of communication, in terms of international relations. Everything should be legislated, and all the rules should be done here in Portugal. But I think we could do much more. I'm not saying the work we're doing here is a bad one, but I think we could be much far away, much better, much more advanced in the way we tell the world what the Lusitano is, you know. And at the end, we continue improving because the Lusitano is incredible. Our horse is capable of everything. So, and this horse doesn't stop surprising as all. At least to me, every time I get surprised by what the Lusitanos can do. And again, is the temperament. But I think the results we are achieving, they could even be better with a more structured organization, with a governance of the association more updated to the times we live in.
Yes. Yeah, well, I agree with that a little bit. I mean, that's why it was also interesting for me to see last weekend what happened a little bit. But... of course, we're talking about the whole world, gets to know more and more and more about the Lusitano. You travel a lot yourself. Mm-hmm. You are always around looking, making connections, looking for horses, meeting other breeders. What's your plans now the next year?
In terms of our breeding program?
Yeah, and you and your traveling and everything.
Our vision is very clear, is to continue. So Montevideo is now very solid in terms of... we've been doing this business, the riding holiday business, for 12 years.
Yes.
What has turned our program special was really the... I think a number of factors, but at the end is, again, the magic of the Lusitano. So my pressure is to keep the quality of our horses... always at the highest level. So it's one thing is to get there, another thing is to stay there. So we really need to keep the quality at the highest level. It's more challenging nowadays because at the end we made this introduction to the Lusitano to thousands of riders in the last years, and the horses now they want to buy are the horses I also need here. So at the end We compete a bit with our
ourselves.
We compete with our clients, but that's a challenge we have to live in, I've been lucky enough to always find good solutions, so that's a bit the DNA of Montevideo, is to keep the quality of the Lusitanos, and we are I cannot tell you a lot of things, but we will continue innovating our program. We have some ideas of. Start new business units also around Montevideo, like we recently started with the real estate unit as well. So we had a lot of requests from clients worldwide that came to Montevideo that wanted to stay here or to invest in our property. And we thought there was an opportunity also to start a little unit for real estate, which we started.
It's at the moment it's an exclusive of the clients that visit us. They get to know this project in Montevideo, but we have already two sold plots. Close plots for horse owners.
Yes.
Yes, we have in terms of competition. We're really proud to have João in the team. João now also has his own yard, because that was also his dream, and we completely understood it. So João shares his yard with ours, and he has a group of horses here. So my vision is to continue doing what we've managed so far, try to be better. And if you ask me, like, really in an honest way, what is my ultimate dream? And it's a dream, because with horses you can never set goals. I think it's more dreams, is to get to the medals. I really believe one day, maybe I will pass away one day completely frustrated, but you need to dream. I believe there will be a Lusitano from Montevideo that will reach the medals in the Olympics. I don't say we will win the Olympics, but I've been there. I've seen with my eyes that it is possible to. It will be really difficult, but it is possible to one day breed a Lusitano that will fight for the medals. And that's a bit the ultimate dream. I don't know whether it will take 4, 8, 12, 20 years. I don't know, but that's the dream. And hopefully with the Portuguese rider, with João.
Yes.
We have also other horses with other riders, so it's impossible for me to keep all the horses here, because that's not possible. But I'm Portuguese, so that would be the ultimate dream. I hope when that medal comes, it is with João and not with a foreign rider. But if it's with a foreign rider, I think he will also understand.
No, but then we should do another podcast. The next time will be after winning a medal with one of your Lusitanos. That would be good.
You have to dream. Like
that should, no, but you're, of course, you work on your goals and you're getting close and you've been developing always.
Talking about the medals, looking at the four last Olympic Games, you had Valegro twice Olympic champion and you had Dallera twice Olympic champion. Those horses were not the horses that when they were 4 or 5 years old that you would put money and you would bet on them to win the Olympics.
No, of course not.
Now even Zonic with Justin,
yes,
would also
very
not
very good example, yeah. Zonic now.
Yeah, wouldn't be the horse that you would put the money in. And I know Zonic's story very close because I've been in touch with Justin, and Justin has also mentioned several times to my team that Ecuador was an inspiration for him.
The way
we believed in João and we stick to the plan, and I have to say I had some talks with Justin even before Zonic was known. No one knew Zonic, and he already believed that the horse will get to the point that he is now. So, but he really believed. I remember having dinner in Lisbon with him, and we were talking about another issue, and with other people. And he says, "This horse will be known worldwide in 2 years," and he was just competing in Prix St. George at the moment. So, this to say that you see the pattern is a rider that has the passion, that believes in its horse.
Yes.
And why did he say that? Because he said, this horse, I can imagine this horse in 2 years, what he's giving to me. And so there was clearly the drive, the passion, and the rider that was refusing several offers for the horse already at that time, and compromising maybe his financial situation, because he believed that this horse would change his life. And he was right.
And he did.
And he was right. So really hats off to him, because these are the stories that I really admire. And I know, because he was getting a lot of money, offers from so many people, like big names that really wanted the horse. And maybe 9 out of 10 riders would have sold. But he said no, because this horse is not for sale. This horse will change my life. And he was completely right. So
just to finish what I was saying, not always the best horses, like the horses that win, the four-year-old and the five-year-olds that are the flashy movers, will get the Grand Prix. Is much more about rideability, about Grand Prix is a different game, where also the rider, I think I used to say in FEI young horses, maybe the horse is 70% and the rider 30%. In Grand Prix, I think the rider is on top of the horse. That's why you see mostly normally the same riders consistently there with different riders. So because it's the system, the ride that is being assessed, you know, Isabel Wert, why is she's always been in the last, I don't know, 8 Olympic Games or 9 Olympic Games, or Carl, yes. 9 Olympic Games, because it's their system that is proving successful with different horses. Of course, to make a good omelet, you need good eggs. so you cannot just go there with a donkey, you will not win the Olympics. So you need a good horse, of course. And this to say, I need to make my job of breeding better horses every time. But I think we're not that far. We're not that far. We have Lusitanos that have outstanding potential to collect. I think we are also improving our system of building them, because at the end this is like a building. You need to build them. You don't believe that the horse is born doing Grand Prix. You need a lot of patience and
very, very, very good management around.
And one of the things my team, like Coralie, Juan, tells me, Diogo, I have a lot of bad things and irritating things. Sometimes I push them too much. But one thing they tell me is that I'm patient. Patient in the way I never put pressure to compete. Yeah. I prefer my horse gets in the ring maybe 1 year later than sooner, because I know this takes time. And if I put too much pressure in terms of going to the ring, I compromise the process. And Ecuador was a good example. He just started doing Grand Prix with 10, and he could have started earlier. So if there is also an advice I need to tell to my Portuguese friends, is we need to create a mentality for those that really want to compete in dressage and show their horses in sports. This takes time. Don't put so much pressure on your riders, because the basics are the foundations of any Grand Prix horse, the basics. That takes time. So if you put too much pressure, you will ruin the process. And I particularly feel the Lusitano in general can be very competitive in Grand Prix, but will never be an FEI young horse, competitive horse. Never. That's for the KWPNs, because you build world-class movers for centuries. That's a bit in your DNA. But in the Grand Prix, it's not only about movements, it's about other things, about the character, about the sacrifice spirit. And this to say, I'm not saying that our horses should never compete in Ermelo or in Verden. No, I think we should be aware that our horse will never be competitive there, because they are not designed for that. I think in the last decade, mostly there has been an inversion of the importance of these competitions. It became an industry itself for semen sales. It's a short-term business. It's what it is. I think for some stables, it's also easier to show results because it's faster. You know, it takes a lot of time to get a horse to Grand Prix. It takes 10, 11 years. Yeah. So in the way, a lot of things can happen. I believe the Lusitano has a word in Grand Prix, but will never be a special horse in FEI young horses. But that's my opinion again.
When is Maestro going to be seen in the Grand Prix? When will he take
it? We have not decided exactly when, but it should be in the first semester. So
it will be soon, somewhere this year.
João has him completely solid at home. He hasn't been, you know, he was, a lot of people ask, but he was very competitive in Prince St. George. He was one of the few Lusitanos that scored more than 70%, which is really difficult for a Lusitano, because Prince St. George, it's mostly about movement.
Yeah.
And he did a 71.7. So he was there. And for me, it was like a check.
Yes.
But my focus was Grand Prix. So João didn't do a lot of Prince. I think he did two international competitions in Prince St. George, because I could see the talent for him was the Grand Prix. It took a bit of time to get there solid because the horse is so big, as you saw yesterday.
really big.
I think you will. It's I think it's maybe three more months to get to the arena. And it's again, he will not start with 75. It's a process. But what I would love is when he gets there that he shows that is already easy for him to do that. That he's not doing it in a hurry. You know, should look easy. With a lot of margin to improve, because that's how every horse gets there. You need margin then to improve, and João will have the time to improve the horse later on. But I would just like the first impression to be an easy one, where the horse feels comfortable doing the test.
Yes, well, Diogo, it was very inspiring again.
Thank you.
I can talk to you for another 3 hours. It's really, but you really do think out of the box, and I like that. And you think in a modern way, and you really, you know, the way you explain things, it's, you'd maybe dare to say things other people will not say, but it's, I appreciate that. And
again, I also like to hear different opinions, because at the end, that's we live in a democracy. But I have strong convictions. I know some they are controversial sometimes, but they are my ideas. And I hope I can through my ideas I can inspire someone.
Exactly. Maybe you never know what who will listen and what will happen. People should follow, if people want to know more about what happens with João and Maestro and your breeding plans, and if people are interested to come here on a holiday or maybe buy the see the horses, see the mares, buy a new horse.
So you can, everyone can follow us through our social media, Equo Resort, in Instagram, in Facebook.
Yes.
We have agencies also spread worldwide.
They can call me.
They of course can call you, and you will organize like you are doing now with this client. We are quite easy to be reached. We have a big team, I just hope we have the energy to continue doing this for a lot of time ahead. And for me, it's a pleasure to, you know, I used to say to the people that are coming here for the first time, either they are clients or they are staff, that every day here is different, because we sometimes we have a week with Australian, New Zealand, Americans. The following day is a group of Swedish, then Finnish. So every week here has a different story, but we connect a lot of equestrian riders here. We have incredible stories of even people that knew here and got married here following Montevideo journey. So, yeah, I think we connect. Montevideo is like, I used to say, United Nation for horse riders, you know, because every week it's such a big mix of countries.
Yes.
But at the end, everyone shares the same passion for riding. So we're lucky to show the Lusitano to a lot of people for the first time.
Well, actually, I experienced it now again, because there's a whole group here now.
More we have people that come that are not newcomers. That I think the best advertising we get is, I think we have those stats, 80% of our clients
come back.
They come back.
Yeah.
So it's a big returning percentage. And of course, our pressure is that, you know, when they come back with a higher expectation. So it's a pressure on me, on my team, and on to deliver. And but that's a good pressure. You know, I think living without pressure is boring.
Very boring.
I love pressure. Yeah. And because at the end, with pressure, you need to deliver. You need to make better and
to focus and to think outside the box. And you are really good at that.
Yeah.
Well, Diogo, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. And hopefully, maybe in 10 years or 12 years, we can have the third interview.
No, not 12
with the
years,
medal.
3 years. We continue 3 years.
I don't promise the medal.
That was Olympic Games. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for listening. And till the next time. Thank you, Diogo.
Thank you, Fleur. See you soon.